You're listening to Discovering You Again with Susan Axelrod. Women facing down the second half of life, who are you putting first? Have you reached an age where you've seen it all, but still know there's more? Is life part two sneaking up on you? Look inside yourself and buckle up. We're just getting started. Don't settle for being comfortable in your skin. Break free and be radiant, inspired, confident, and abundant. These are your years. Take them and stop apologizing. Attack the second half of life with a purpose. Discovering You Again with Susan Axelrod starts now.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Discovering You Again podcast. I am delighted that you joined me. You know, every radio show, every podcast I do, I have this sense of how special and important the topic is that I'm speaking about. I think it's because I care so much. I care so deeply about the topic of women discovering themselves again in the second half of life. You've heard me talk about how we spend the first half of our lives, once we come into our adulthood, giving, giving, giving to others. And then there comes this time we begin to cross a bridge where the others we have supported for so long have begun to move on and find their independence, whether it's children in a family or whether it's a team you may have been cultivating for a long time. And then we look out ahead. We open our eyes. We're almost putting on a fresh pair of glasses, seeing through a new pair of lenses and saying, what is my second half of life going to look like? Who am I now? If we're lucky, we may have that sense of self, the promise, the opportunity of the phrase, it's my turn now. Now, as a confidence coach, I get hired sometimes by women at this stage to break through, to get to just the ability to say, it's my turn now. Everybody is not able to say that. For years or decades of your giving to others and doing for others, sometimes it's hard to say, it's my turn now. That is the basis of my Discovering You Again thesis. That is also the basis of my work as a confidence coach with women in their second half. So if we get to the place where we can look out ahead and say, what do I want my second half to look like? What am I thinking? What's on my mind? What am I feeling? What's on my heart? What does it look like? If we can actively ask ourselves these questions, then we can engage in a self-dialogue, or hopefully in my community, Discovering You Again. I have an online course and I have a Facebook page called What Will Your Legacy Be? We talk about these things. What can your second half look like? So I work with people who are starting out new businesses in their second half. They're taking personal journeys in their second half. They're exploring, going in and exploring what the message is that has been growing and evolving in them. Today, I will be delighted to bring on the guests that I have lined up. Two women who, if you'll forgive me for saying, are in their second half, who made a decision to run for political office. I am awed and enamored of what they have done. For some of you who know me, or for people who have been following me, it might not be a surprise to you that in my younger life, I actually thought quite a bit about running for political office. It was truly something, it was really on my radar. It was truly something I contemplated and that I thought that I wanted to do. Ultimately, for me, I ascended to a leadership role for an organization that turned out to be very political and sort of opened my eyes to that world and made me wonder, I'm not really sure that's exactly the direction I want to be going in. But still and all, I am enamored of the people who choose this path. Why? They are our leaders. the people, I have had a thesis for quite some time. The people who go onto this path, who become our leaders, who are they? What have their younger lives been like, or their earlier lives been like? How did they come here? And how do they turn into the leader, the political leader they become? Sometimes for better, for decades of stellar leadership, which we grow to count on and follow with respect. And sometimes it does happen that they don't end up, having a stellar political career. I am absolutely convinced that it will be important for women, for us to have more women running for office. That's not to say that it's bad about, you know, men being in office. I just have my own personal thesis, thought, opinion that women nurture and women lead by more nurturing than competition. And in some ways, in the political world, that it is that competition that gets fierce and sometimes ugly, and then it evolves sort of somehow into this self orientation, which then turns into greed. I don't know. It's a whole trajectory. I don't really know how it happens, to tell you the truth. But on the other side, for the people who really stay true, they have good mentors, they make best use of resources, of advisors, of other stellar individuals who really want to guide them and support them and hold their hands when they need and, you know, really share vital success energy with them, then those people go on to have stellar careers. So I am very curious about how it is that people make the decision to run for office. I am very curious. I honestly, I don't really know a lot of people who have run for office, but I'm very curious about the trajectory of thought that goes along with it. I do want to share something funny about this that happened to me. In 2018, in the midterm elections, I ended up acting as a little quiet background confidence coach for a few women who were running for office. Now, I got to know them in different ways. In one case, somebody else was working on the campaign of the person, and another case, I don't want to really reveal anything, but I got connected to them in various ways, shall we say. I was introduced as a confidence coach. And so as such, that's how they knew me. That was really the only way they knew me. And so I offered to just have freely a conversation, because even then I wanted to support women in these roles. And so for weeks, I'd have to really kind of think about it a little bit, but for several weeks before the election, leading all the way up to the election, I was sort of texting and had a few calls with a few different people. And I was not there to answer questions. I was there to be in the energy with, to hold space for, to listen, and to feedback as a coach, the kinds of things that I was hearing and exploring some things with them. One of the things, for example, that I explored with one of them was, if I am elected to a national office, what's going to happen with my children? I have young school-age children. If I'm going to be flying back and forth to Washington, D.C., how does that look? How does that go? What does that look like? Now, as it happened, this person was divorced, so therefore single, and did not have the at-home partner to help out in that way. But even when someone has an at-home partner to parent, while that person would be in Washington, for example, there's still these feelings and sort of energy and angst about what's going to happen to the children. So that's a whole area to explore about women going into politics. That's why I'm very intrigued and enamored of people really running for political office in their second half. So I want to ask you, if you are listening to me today, I want to ask you a question. Take a breath. It's a big question. Take a breath. Take a stretch. Open your mind. I want to ask you, have you ever considered running for political office? Yes, I'm pausing. That wasn't a technical glitch. I paused. I created space after my question for you to consider that. I actually hope that your answer is either, well, yes, I have, or, I don't know. I might consider that. We are going to discuss this further. We're going to explore this more when we come back after the break. I really, really honestly do want you to give thought to this question. It may not be for you, but it may be for someone you know. I have a thesis that I believe it is our responsibility to open our minds and think, use our brains and look around and help other people, if it's not for me, help other people consider this vital activity. The future of our communities depends on it, and the future of our country depends on it. And by extension, the world, because of how we interact with the world, how our leaders interact with the world. So I'm very serious about this, and I really believe it starts at the community level, whether it's a school board or a town board, a town council. We're going to speak with somebody in a city council today, or a national position. So stay tuned, stick around. I'm going to ask you more thought-provoking questions when we come back after the break. And I want to thank you so much for joining and being here on this very, very important show today. I will see you after the break.
Have you ever heard of the 90-10 rule? It goes like this. 90% of the time, no one is thinking of you. 90% of the time, everyone's thinking about themselves. And if you think of it like that, it takes the weight off because now you're not being judged. I'm Megan Edge. I'd love for you to join me on Playing on the Edge Radio, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host Dr. Pat on Transformation Radio FM.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Ober. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Ober. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyober.com. That's drkathyober.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Are you done being afraid to jump into the life that's waiting for you? Are you ready for a real shift? I invite you to tune in every Tuesday with me, Tracy L., on the Tracy L. Clark Show, where we will teach you how to live your extraordinary life. At 8 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, where I will provide the tools and the steps needed to help you transcend perceived limitations and move forward with an extraordinary life. For more information, visit me at TracyLClark.com.
A word of caution, if you prefer the status quo and you are not interested in improving every aspect of your life, this book will trigger the shift out of you. The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens is available now. Author Colette Steffen brings the powerful knowledge and life-changing energy and empowerment from the radio airwaves to the pages of her new book. To get your copy in paperback or ebook, visit thetruthisfunny.com today.
Dream on, fly high, and live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Laura Meeks guides you in finding your unique gifts and bringing them to life. As a certified life coach, speaker, and veteran bomber pilot for the U.S. Air Force, Laura knows how to follow a dream. She is ready to support you so you can dream on, fly high, and live adventurously. For more information on Laura and her work, visit flyhighliving.com.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to the Discovering You Again podcast. For those of you who know me, you know I keep it real. I have done this myself as I have grown into the second half of life and realized how much more confident you can be if you just keep it real. And so to that end, I'm going to tell you, I'm delighted to have our two guests on today because we had a little technical difficulty going on in the background and I just had faith. So I am truly delighted to introduce my two guests today. Carmel Patrick was just elected to the Schenectady, New York City Council in her first political election. Her platform includes building safe neighborhoods, ensuring healthy starts for children, strengthening education, and supporting opportunities for our youth, inspiring hope. For her day job, she is Vice President of Development at the Museum of Innovation and Science in Schenectady, New York, and she is a nonprofit management professional with over 30 years of experience in higher education, fundraising, grant writing, community development, and marketing. And it is in that capacity that I know her, because those of you know, that is also my career. Carmel, hi! Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So happy. My next guest, Michelle Osterlich, was just elected to the Schenectady County Legislature, her first successful election after being appointed to the position to fill out a term. She ran for the New York State Assembly in the 49th District in 2018. Her deep and abiding commitment is to making her community a better place to live and raise a family. She believes that cities, towns, and villages run smoothly when local government is at its best, ensuring that everything from library programs to healthcare are seamlessly available to all of its citizens. She is committed to working tirelessly to make sure that happens. Michelle, thank you for joining us by phone today.
Oh, thank you, Susan. Thank you so much for doing this. Hi, Carmel.
Hello, Michelle. How are you?
Good.
We should have had some coffee or wine because Carmel and Michelle got to know each other very well throughout the election. So I really want to say again, I'm touched and tickled to have both of you join us. And I have a big thing to say. Congratulations on your win. Yay!
Thank you.
Thank you.
I really would like to ask each of you, how are you feeling today? What does it feel like to have worked and won? Michelle, let me start with you.
Oh, goodness. It feels amazing now that I've won, because as you know, last year I didn't win, and it was in itself an incredible experience, but wow, it feels really good to win.
Love it, love it, love it. Carmel, how about you?
Well, absolutely feels incredible to win, especially since it was my first time out and I wasn't really sure. I was up against several incumbents. So it was a lot of work trying to get out there and make sure that folks knew who I was and what I believed in. And now I'm just very excited and I can't wait to roll up my sleeves in January and start to work.
Oh my gosh. My heart is beating fast, you guys. I swear it really is. This is so exciting. So you guys know that I have these pre-prepared questions. I wanted to be the good podcast host and, you know, be prepared and prepare you. But my listeners know we go off script whenever we need. So I want to make sure that you guys get to say what you feel needs to be said today. So I'm going to start with my first question and we're going to see how it goes. Is that okay?
Sure.
Sounds great.
Great. Okay. So here's my first question. How did you come to be running for political office at this time in your life? Was it something that you had always wanted to do, had ever imagined to do? Our listeners are women in the second half of life. Can they just do this too? I cannot wait to hear the answers. Carmel, let's start with you.
And the answer is yes, I've actually always wanted to do this. My parents are very active volunteers, active politically, et cetera. So my entire upbringing was surrounded by people. I grew up in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Watertown, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Kennedy's and Tip O'Neill, it was all a big part of our lives as I was growing up. So public service has been something that I've been interested in always. In terms of why now, I felt that I was going to wait until I was retired. I had been approached several times by folks in Schenectady who wanted me to run, and I really wanted to wait until I was not working full time. But I have to say that the national election kind of spurred me on to really understanding that it was time for us locally to do what we could to make as many differences as we could in our neighborhoods and communities here. Because of some of the larger issues that are going on in our country. So I've been in my profession, Susan, as you know, for well over 30 years, and I felt like it was time for a new challenge in that regard as well. So, you know, I've got a lot to learn and I'm ready to go.
I love this. I'm already suffering greatly because, like, right there, I've got several questions. And so I do just want to ask you something, and we're just going to just see how all this goes. I can already tell you we're going to be skipping the break and continuing the conversation. Okay, so it's very interesting, Carmel, that you said you always wanted to do this. And I did. I grew up in Newton Center, Massachusetts. So my first 10 years. And so, you know, once you're in Red Sox Nation, I mean, you know,
that's
come on.
It.
Yeah, that's it. And so I know of the influence of which you speak and of which you were exposed. Carmel, did you have anyone in your family who was in political office? Did you say that?
I didn't say it, but yes, I have three older siblings, all of whom are about, you know, between 7 and 10 years older than me. So I've watched their careers and their lives unfold as I was growing up. My oldest brother, Anthony, actually served on sort of the state. They both lived on Cape Cod. And so he was a representative from his district into some of the state political scene. And my brother Fred was very active on his school board, which was a very large district on Cape Cod, the Nauset School Board. He was president.
Mm-hmm.
So both of them were involved. Otherwise, for my parents and my sister, it's just been leadership, volunteer leadership positions that they were involved in.
Okay, so I want our listeners to really, truly understand it does start somewhere, and often it does start on the school board. So mm-hmm. I don't want to go off on a tangent there, but I do want to say that these local elected positions are a place that it does start. I also, Carmel, want to ask you a question for you to be thinking, and then while I talk to Michelle. So Carmel, my question is something like, you know, for you, you had the exposure and you always had a long interest in this. And I'm wondering what you might say to others who have not always had an interest in this. Okay, can you be thinking about that? And I'm going to try to, you know, come back to that, to remember to come back to that.
Sure.
So, Michelle, I really want to hear your story. How did you come to be running for public office at this time in your life? And, you know, was it something you had always wanted to do, et cetera?
So back when I was in college, I was definitely interested in public policy. I studied public policy and went to law school. So it wasn't out of the realm of possibilities. But then, you know, life took a turn and got married, had kids, stayed home, loved that, and just did a lot in the local nonprofit world and volunteered for schools and our local hospital and community foundations, that kind of stuff. I've been on lots of boards, and I really love building community. And just like Carmel said, the national politics sort of took another turn. So I started in grassroots, advocating on issues and supporting other candidates right after the 2016 election. And then we had a local state senator who I just didn't agree with public policy wise. So on most of the major issues, and we looked for a candidate to run. And when we didn't find someone, I just stepped up because it, you know, even though we are in our second half of life and it's not easy, it's, I liken it to going into crisis mode. A lot of women I know, like if they have a loved one who has a bad diagnosis or any financial issues, we really just put everything to the side, wrap our head around it, do all the research we can, talk to everyone we know, whoever has been through something similar, and really delve in. And that's what I see having happened. It was a group of women. I was never alone, that's for sure. It was a group of women, and we all were in crisis mode. And when it turned into a campaign instead of advocacy work, we just took on roles and just plowed ahead because it was just that important to us. And just like Carmel said, when now it's local office, but it's really, that's where it's so important. That's where it's our friends and our neighbors, and we can see things changing as we can affect them, which is, it's gratifying. It's wonderful.
You know, the trajectory of the local moving up the scale to national, right? That's, I think that is hugely important. I think that you get this, again, I like to use the analogy of a set of lenses. What are the lenses we're seeing through? Also the filters we hear through, but you know, you get to see it in a different way. If you go straight to national office, that, you know, you, not that that's a bad thing, I'm not saying it is, but you know, you guys have, you'll have the richness of the local grassroots experience. So Michelle, embedded in there was something, by the way, I've got my pen, I've got my paper. If anybody sees me looking down, it's because I'm writing notes to myself from this delicious conversation. Two things. One, you also talked about volunteering. Carmel talked about observing her mother or somebody volunteering and getting leadership experience in leadership roles as a volunteer in the social sector, right? The nonprofit sector. And you said that as well, that you sort of came up through the volunteer ranks. I think that that's a very interesting point for our listeners to hear and pay attention to. Your volunteer work is giving you good experience, and it literally could, I don't know, maybe, maybe not, but maybe it could be preparing you for something else. Okay, I'm going to park that in shock and awe and let people think about that. But Michelle, I wanted to ask you the part about where you say, I was never alone. That's really, like, that's what I wrote down. I was never alone. That's really, you know, it takes a village. And also that's very much of a women thing, you know. So can you talk about that? When you say I was never alone, you know, say more about that.
So it's absolutely true. I think it is a women thing. We started the grassroots organization around my kitchen table. And when you are very intimately involved in each other's lives working on a project, and I think pretty much anybody who ever has worked on a project just become friends. And we'd already been friends. And it's one of those things that you just end up supporting each other in so many ways. I mean, logistically, if somebody had some crisis we could help them out with, help with the kids. And intellectually, we challenge each other. And we all came from different backgrounds. So we had a lot of different experiences and emotions on all the issues. Yeah. So we digested issues differently and we communicated differently, very much in a complementary way. And when we opened a campaign office, because it was predominantly women, we had a playroom. Nobody cared about FaceTime. We didn't just hang out to chat. We were very serious in our work. Everyone took their roles very seriously. Nobody wanted to let each other down. And that, I think, really pushed all of us forward. Our campaign manager had commented more than once that when he walked into the campaign and we talked about the fact that we had dedicated volunteers, he'd heard that before and it never really actualized. And when he saw how hard we were all working and then inspiring others to join the campaign and how hard other volunteers were working on it, also predominantly women, I think he was really surprised and happy.
That's amazing. So, so much in there. It always happens with these discussions that I tell myself, I can't wait to already listen to this discussion again, because there's a lot of richness in there. I hope that our listeners really heard the multiple vital messages embedded in your answer there. And I'm very, very excited about that. I want to just quickly ask you, Michelle, Carmel, I'm coming back to you on that question, but Michelle, I want to ask you, who was your campaign manager and how did that come about? That wasn't a planned question, but it just really came to me strongly.
So when we first started the campaign, we'd read a lot of books. We'd gone to some campaign schools and we did it on a volunteer basis for a couple months until we knew that we had the campaign itself had outgrown volunteerism. So we interviewed and hired a man named Steve Napier, who recently ran for mayor of Cohoes. He's an extraordinary person. And he jumped on board and it was just a fantastic fit.
Is there such a thing as campaign school?
Yes, there is. There are a lot of organizations that do it. We went to an Eleanor's Legacy campaign school. Eleanor's Legacy is a New York. Do you know them already?
I do, but go ahead, say it.
Oh, sure. It's a New York based organization that is, its predominant reason is to get more women into office. And they are kind of like the state equivalent of Emily's List.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you know, you may not know, my website is called What Will Your Legacy Be? So of course, I know about Eleanor's Legacy. Okay, so all right, so thank you for that. I just learned something. There's such a thing called campaign school. Carmel, before I go on to the next question that I had in mind, I want to come back to you to really see your thoughts on this question, because what do you think? Do you think there's more people who have always thought about it like you guys both did in some fashion? Or do you think there's more people who have never thought about it? And if you never thought about it, where do we go from there?
I would have to say that I think that probably a lot of people haven't thought about it. I think, however, and I'd be interested to see what Michelle says too, but as I was going door to door, and we really tried to hit doors all across the city of Schenectady, every single neighborhood, I do think that there's more interest now. I think that the groups like the group that Michelle and her colleagues started, and other groups like Capital Women out of Albany, these types of groups have sprung up all over the country. Because people are very, very concerned. So I think there is more of an awareness, but I do think that people may not necessarily be thinking of themselves in those roles. And I do want to come back to what you guys were talking about in terms of volunteer leadership, because I do think in answering your question that you kind of snuck in there, but that is really important. I've always felt, as someone that has done a lot of volunteer development, right? Board development, I always say to people that you're just going to be able to put yourself into roles where maybe you're not learning in your home, or you're not, you know, running a home, or you're not learning in the workplace. You can get involved in a volunteer activity that's going to expose you to budgeting, to financial planning for an organization, that's going to give you more experience at public speaking. So I do think that, you know, those are the ways to try to integrate people into thinking about political systems. And in my case, thinking about, you know, the question that you asked me to think about, two things. One, as a development professional in every nonprofit, I've had to advocate for my nonprofit. So whether it was that I had good relationships with city officials, whether it was Troy, Albany, or Schenectady, or whether I was at, you know, in state assembly people's offices or in state senate, people's offices, I had to learn how to converse and advocate for the things that my organization cared about because we needed funding, right? So that got me into relationship with a lot of people who I consider friends. I mean, I think I've known, you know, a lot of our folks for years. And that makes you pay more attention. I mean, when you're, you know, I read several newspapers. I think that it's important for people to think about their values and think about their positions. I think going into this for me as a new experience, I put a lot of time and energy into filling out applications for endorsements, for example, because it gave me that chance to articulate about a lot of different issues.
I love that.
That's good preparation as well if for people that are thinking about this.
You know, risk.
You gotta say, I'm gonna be out of my norm. I'm going to, you know, be trying something new, and it is risky. But there are people along the way. I want to go back to that never alone comment that Michelle made, because Karen Johnson, who was the first woman mayor of the city of Schenectady and was for years on our county legislature. I went to a panel discussion about women in politics that Karen was a part of. And it really also got me kind of motivated to do this. But that was her big saying. She always said, if you're doing it alone, you're doing it wrong. And I think, you know, Michelle and I probably both heard that many, many times over the various tributes to Karen that happened in the last.
A beautiful legacy Karen has left us. I do want to say that Carmel and I are both fundraising executives of decades, and she made reference to the field of development, fundraising, development, advancement, and it's a very curious thing that there may be a lot of people who are going to be transitioning out of that field in their second half. And of course, we know there's many of us women who may be interested in that. So that's interesting. I want to invite our listeners to open their minds and not get blocked when you hear Carmel and Michelle mentioning our local community places. I would like to invite our listeners to insert your local community names. These two are my peeps. They're in my region, and I'm so excited about that. But I want you, wherever you are in the entire country, to insert your local school board, your local council, your local legislature, your local organizations. Okay, so that was something that came to me that I wanted to say. So thank you so much. I want to ask you, Michelle, what has been the most surprising thing that about getting into public life? Now, I want to remind people, you were appointed into a position to fill out a term, and then you actually lost an election, which, by the way, for the record, my mother is a lifelong member of the League of Women Voters, and she still in her 80s moderates political debates. But she always told me that losing is only on the way to your election, to your successful election. Okay. So, Michelle, I want to ask you, what was surprising, you know, like what has been surprising for you about, you know, the work and then the running and then getting elected, et cetera?
First of all, I love that, what your mother said. I feel very, very happy to hear that. But the most surprising thing, I think, is how much I enjoyed it. Campaigning itself, a lot of people think of it as being, you know, grueling. You're going door to door. You're putting yourself in very uncomfortable situations outside your comfort zone. But on the flip side, you're having conversations with people that are really meaningful. You're doing things you never would have done before. People have, and I know Carmel feels the same way, having gone door to door so much, is people tell you their stories on their front doorstep. And when they tell you either their struggles or their blessings, you absorb them. And when they're struggles, you just remember those conversations forever and you take those with you. So there's been experiences along the way that I've just been awed by the fact that this is an opportunity to meet people I would never have met, do things I've never met, I would have never done, sorry. And that just pushes you to enjoy people and situations in a way that you don't normally get to do. But also take those back. And now that we've both won, take those experiences and conversations back and do something with them, which
is even
better.
Michelle is on the phone, so she can't see my mouth is open because of all the things that you liked campaigning like that door to door. And I know your living room sessions was one of the things that you liked. I wonder if our listeners would be surprised to hear that. But I know because I feel energy. So I could feel the energy, Michelle, of the reason that is because of your impassioned state of being around the work that you're doing. You had to be truly impassioned to be standing there in full energy on a doorstep with full open essence, like listening to the stories that people were sharing with you. So I'm delighted, actually. Yeah. I'm shocked, but I'm delighted at the answer, because I'm wondering if we just helped somebody break through a worry or fear about that piece of it. So that was great.
And if I can just add, underlying that, a realization I had just post 2016 is politics is important. And a lot of times it's the last thing on our list. If we have to watch the local news or read a headline, it can be hard. And so we tend to avoid it, and we deal with the crises in our families or just around us. And we work hard in our local communities in other ways. But politics is important. And that was, I think, where that passion came from, realizing that this was worth my time. It was worth everybody's effort, because you can make a real difference, an impactful difference in people's lives.
I mean, again, I thank you so much for saying that. And I'm wondering, and I'm hoping, even praying, that we have some people listening who actually have a breakthrough right now, with your journey that you just shared with us, that you really are communicating and articulating how important really politics is in spite of the ups and downs. Carmel talked about risk. And so, Carmel, actually, I want to go back to you because I have a big question for you. Michelle, you better get ready, because I'm still going to be asking the question of you as well. And Carmel, I have a big question for you. Let's get real, baby. Let's really seriously get real. Would you be willing to share what were the hiccups? What were the challenges? What was really, hard for you? Because I'm like, this podcast is, we got to get real. We've got to get real about this, because we've got to get more people running. So please lay it on me.
Well, I think it's a huge learning curve. I mean, there's a lot that goes into running a campaign. There's a lot to learn about those logistical pieces of running a campaign. So I think that was a major challenge, was just, I did not go to campaign school. So I really was listening to people like Michelle, I might add. But I mean, you really have to know that you have a team, and that team can help you at least explore the things that need to happen in order to be a successful campaigner. So I would say that was one of the challenges. And of course, working full time, as we all do, time. I mean, was, I knew going into it over these last several months that every single day after work, I needed to get home, change, put on lace up my sneakers, and, grab my campaign material and go door to door. And that was difficult, especially, again, the type of work that I do. There's a lot of evening commitments. I didn't really get to be home that often. Had to still be making sure that my obligations to my husband and to my family were also being met. Mm. So time piece, I think, was kind of challenging. And then, of course, you're meeting a lot of different personalities as well. And I think if we're going to be real, I mean, you really have to negotiate around all those different personalities, which is another thing I think that our volunteer experiences help us learn to do as well. That's a reality as well. Not everybody's going to be on the same page as you go through this journey.
Interesting. That's huge. That time element thing, you know, when you are working full time, that's a commitment. I say the same thing to you as I said to Michelle, which is, you know, clearly the only way you do that is when you are deeply impassioned about what it is that you're doing. You get home, a little peck on the cheek, honey, can you have dinner waiting for me at 9 o'clock when I get back? Right. Or order something in, I got to go. I'm lacing up my sneakers to go, you know, so that's huge. Michelle, what would you describe as the challenges or the hiccups that you experienced?
I think Carmel answered. So she just hit on so many pieces. And I wholeheartedly agree. Mm-hmm. The only thing I would add is there is an element of, am I good enough? And there, I do think this is particular or especially true in women. Mm-hmm. And it shows out, like, all the data shows that women need to be asked several times to run. They don't tend to volunteer and just jump up and say, oh, I definitely want to do this like men do. And it's harder for women to fundraise. It's harder for women to put themselves out there. And that self-doubt is difficult to manage. At some point, you need to realize that you are smart enough and that you are capable. Even if you've done lots of different activities, it's hard sometimes to take on a newer role that's different than the other volunteer activities and truly believe in yourself. I definitely hit a point where it came to that, where I had to say to myself that no, this is something I can absolutely do. But it's a journey. I think it's a journey for everyone, every woman starting a new journey to say, this isn't just something I want. This is something that I will succeed at and take that point of view. I don't know how Carmel felt.
Well,
she ever had that.
Yeah. No. Well, yes, I've had that all my life, Michelle.
Oh, no.
I think it is, you know, particularly women and particularly in successful women. I think that there is a lot of research around the fact that often we don't necessarily have that confidence in ourselves. And we think, well, you know, right from the start in school, right, we get an A and we think, oh, well, the test was easy. That's why I got the A. Oh, gee, well, you know, the person before me in my job didn't do anything. So now, you know, I look like a superstar because I'm doing stuff. I mean, I think that women tend to question those things way more in their lives. And I don't think that ends after childhood. And so I think it's really important that we continue. And actually, Michelle, I want to go, and Susan, again, back to your tribe, right? Back to the tribe of women and the tribe of men and women who are out there as your cheerleaders, helping you to continue to reinforce the idea that, okay, I'm doing this. I'm making this happen. Mm. Successful. I mean, to me, that's really important, especially my husband, my girlfriends. I mean, you know, those people are always there for you.
I know. Let's give a shout out to our friend Eileen Handelman. Woo!
The Trez. We call her the Trez.
Yeah, we have, the three of us have a mutual friend, and she was the person I went to. She was my go-to person when I knew that I wanted to have these guys on my podcast. Mm-hmm. I didn't try to reach out to them sort of warmly or coldly. I went to a person who I knew them. I vetted my idea with her. She was like, yes. She made the you know, introduction. And that's how the three of us are sitting here today. So thank you, Eileen. Look, I'm laughing here because, you know, Carmel has known me as a fundraiser for many, many years. Michelle doesn't really know me and my experience, but I am a confidence coach. That's what I do. And that's what I get hired to do. Although I didn't ask them to pitch me and my services, I do know, and I mentioned the thing earlier in the first segment about supporting some political candidates quietly in the background, that both, I also teach confidence speaking. So I do know that that is something that is very needed by people to create that foundational confidence in order to be able to go up from there, you know, to really get onto that, I call that the platform, and then you can really sort of confidently move up from there. I want to let people know that I can be found at my website, whatwillyourlegacybe.com. I want to let people know that I have a daily, yes, I said daily, Facebook Live broadcast. It's like my own television show. I am on weekly at 5 p.m. Eastern, where I come on, I share coaching tips and tools. I talk with people who join me and generally just have fun. So that is how I can be reached. And Carmel, I want to ask you, what would you like to share? Do you have a website that you would like to share for people to learn more about you?
I actually have a Facebook page for, it's for the number 4, Carmel Patrick. And so people can keep up with things that I'm interested in, the things that I feel are important, and the things that hopefully we're going to be accomplishing as a team as we move forward on that Great. Facebook page.
Great. And I want to say to anybody listening from everywhere in the country that you can still, you don't have to be local. You can still go on to Carmel's Facebook page and watch, observe, and learn. And you can still ask questions and still help her even grow. Michelle, what's your contact or access information?
I'm also on Facebook, so you can search Facebook for Michelle for Schenectady County. And I have a website that has a contact page, so that's michelleforschenectadycounty.com.
Great. So if you don't know how to spell Schenectady, look it up. Okay, we just have another minute or two. Carmel, I wanted to ask you about the League of Women Voters. Yes. In my research, I noted that you made reference to the League and the Voters Guide. And I know, as I mentioned earlier, it's such an important organization. And I just wanted to ask you to share what your experience was with the League.
Okay, so I'm a relatively new League of Women Voters member. I've always known about the League of Women Voters. And I know this sounds redundant, but again, last fall, I really felt that, and this was before I decided to run for office, I felt that one of the most important things that we all can be doing in our country right now is getting people out there to vote, getting people registered to vote, and, you know, educating people about the campaigns that are running. So I joined the League of Women Voters. It's an incredible group of women in our community. I feel that it's a lot of our older women. So I think it's really a chance for younger women to get involved with the League. And that's what the League is about. The League is not a partisan organization. They sponsor candidate forums during election time with, you know, all different parties represented. They stay unbiased. And they're out there trying to make sure that people understand issues that are important in our day-to-day lives, as well as global issues that are important. And they, but it's also good conversation. I mean, I've been to several luncheons where I've heard great speakers, on issues that I needed to know just as a, you know, in my life, let alone now as a elected official.
Yeah.
Need to learn. So it's a great organization, and they're all over the place, and people should join in.
I totally agree. And I learned myself that the simple way to say what the League does is this: they create informed voters.
Yes.
They create empowered voters. It is, in fact, a nonpartisan organization. So we just have a few seconds left. I just really want to say thank you. Thank you times a million. Carmel Patrick and Michelle Osterlich, I want to say I'm here local. And if you want to continue this conversation locally in the community, whatever that looks like, I am so in. And if anybody wants to contact me to ask me about doing a podcast interview for yourself, interviewing your elected officials, please get in touch, because I really want to support you to do that. These guys, They took the risk, they took the responsibility, they made the decision, they made the commitment, and then they won, which is not to be taken for granted, per my mother's comment about, you know, you lose elections on the way to the successful election. So I am going to stay tuned and stay apprised, and I'm going to be in the background cheering you both on for your best success. You can text me if you need a little confidence coaching texting. That's one of the things that I will offer you today, anytime that you want. And I just really want to say thank you for taking the time today. I know I can't imagine how busy you both are, and want to wish each of you the very, very best of luck in your endeavors.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you so much, Susan.
And all of your viewers, get involved.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, folks. So that's it. A stellar podcast discussion with some of our newly elected leaders. I want to ask you to consider discovering you again. What can your second half look like? I had these women on to show you that whatever it is that's in your mind or on your heart to do, you could conceivably do it. Don't block yourself from the dream or desire that might be growing in you. Just open your mind, take a breath, give yourself a break, and say yes. All right, folks, that's it for today. We'll see you next time on the Discovering You Again podcast. Take good care.
You've been listening to Discovering You Again with Susan Axelrod on Transformation Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in, and be sure to catch us next month as Susan Axelrod helps answer that burning middle-aged question, what now? Get ready to dive in and be radiant in your skin. Connect to a dialogue of fun, encouragement, and new ways to tackle your future. For more about Susan, go to www.whatwillyourlegacybe.com.